right, friends, Greg Kokel here for Stand to Reason. Thank you so much for being part of our show. And I have a small apology to offer, and that is we have been having some difficulties with our call-in machines, so I can't take calls today. We missed them last week. Hopefully, we'll be up and running next week, so I expect all of you who've been trying to get in for the last couple weeks to overwhelm me with calls so we can service you well, answer your questions, and speak to you about the things that matter to you. But anyway, I thought I'd start this beginning segment a little differently. A few weeks back, I spent four great days with my buddies in Dallas at this year's CIA training. It's Cross-Examine Instructor Academy training. Of course, we've been talking about this for years. Frank Turek, J. Warner Wallace, Brett Kunkel, a whole bunch of us are out there training others to be more effective communicators as Christians, to be able to speak to groups and to make the case that Christianity is worth thinking about in various ways, or maybe establish themselves more effectively as YouTube voices. And there were a number of YouTubers that were there. And I mean, every year we have fabulous people who we get to train, and this year was no different. It was magnificent. And while I was there, though, I heard a fascinating SDR story from one of the conferees. His name is Josh Morris, and I've actually asked him to come on the air and tell his story himself, because I don't want to get it messed up. And it's a little bit of a strange story. So, Josh, I bet you, whenever you told me your story earlier when we were in Dallas, you didn't expect that you'd end up on the radio show a couple of weeks later, I imagine, did you?
No. Oh, when I actually got the email, I was quite shocked that you even remembered who I was. So,
well, it was a magnificent story. And just to set the stage here, we encountered each other early on in the three-day series, and you said hi to me and introduced yourself, and then you made some passing remark to me about how the relativism book had been so helpful to you in turning your mind around about spiritual things. I'm just going to leave it at that. You can fill in the blanks in just a moment. But I was grateful for that, and I thanked you at the time, and then we parted ways. We went, we were doing our things, and then later on, I think a day later, we sat down and had lunch together, because that was the setting. Everybody's eating together. And that's when you went into more detail about your story. And that's when I realized how bizarre it actually was. So why don't you kind of take it from the top, Josh, and tell us about your background a little bit, where you were spiritually, your encounter with your friend who made the remark that began this process that ended up at CIA here in 2020 and meeting me.
Sure. I'll kind of start at the beginning. So I grew up in Arkansas, and my dad is a pastor and my brother's a pastor. And so I kind of raised up in a church home, and just a typical kind of church that you would expect. We had a wonderful pastor of 25 years. And as most pastors, you know, they get older and they want to retire or just time to move on. And so this pastor decided to move on, and we ended up getting a new pastor that came right out of Bible college, looked very promising on paperwork, and just had all the credentials. This pastor ended up being a little bit abusive to me and my brother, and we were interns at the church at the time that my dad was a pastor. We were 16, and so there were some abuses that happened there, and that kind of started my, as in the progressive world, they'll use the term a lot, deconstruction. I started harboring a lot of bitterness towards the church. I ended up going to Bible college because that's what I thought I was going to do. I thought I was going to be a pastor because my dad was a pastor and my brother was a pastor. And so I was just going to fall in suit. Ended up going to Bible college, loved it, got out, started working with kids. But during that time, I found a church that was, it's a wonderful church. It's a church for broken people. And at the time, I didn't know it, but I was pretty broken and I needed to be there. But through a weird series of events, I ended up in this community group. this community group was with some of the elders in our church, and I was having all these questions and doubts, and I was raising them. And throughout our time at this community group, we kept talking about questions about the Bible and inerrancy, and if Paul should even be listened to, and things of that nature. And it really affirmed a lot of doubts that I was having and a lot of people I was listening to. And so through it, my sister came out as a homosexual, and so I wanted to deal with that. And reading the Bible, if you read it as a whole, you know, you can't really, my sister wasn't saved, and so I couldn't handle that. So I ended up reinterpreting scripture, and then my best friend Jake, who went to Bible college with me, ended up coming out as gay as well. And so I was like, well, what do I do here? So I started looking into...
So you're kind of... sounds like you're kind of leaving your whole spiritual thing that you had kind of grown up with behind, adopting a more progressive, so to speak, view of Scripture, which embraced a lot of these more leftist concepts to make you comfortable with Christianity and these leftist notions at the same time. Is that a fair way of kind of summing it?
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. And one day we were all sitting in community group. We were sharing different ideas and thoughts. And my friend goes, my friend Jake says, he goes, I've never felt...
The gay guy.
Yes, the guy that came out gay that was my Bible college roommate. He goes, I've never felt so firmly planted in midair. And I was like, man, that's so profound. Like, I thought that was the coolest statement. And little did I know that I was very wrong at the time. But I ended up typing that into Google because I thought it, I was like, he got that from a book. I thought he got it from, there's a couple of like progressive writers like Rob Bell or Richard Rohr. And so I thought he got it from someone like that. And so I wanted to read this book. Little did I know that you had written a book, Greg, called Relativism, Firmly Planted in Thin Air.
Right.
And so progressives hold that, you know, we're all Christians. So I saw that you were a Christian, you've written this wonderful book on relativism, and I said, well, like, it looks like it doesn't totally agree with some of the things that I view, but we're all in this together. So I ended up picking it up, reading it, and learning that I was just relative. All my morals were relative. I had nothing to stand on at the end of the day except for what I felt and what I liked. And
ergo, the subtitle, Feet Firmly Planted in Midair. So, but let me ask you just for my own clarification, Josh. When you picked up the book, were you picking up the book thinking that you were going to get a critique of the relativism that many of you and your friends were embracing? Or were you thinking, well, this guy's kind of on my wavelength. We're kind of relativistic, and this is going to be a promotion of relativism? I'm not clear on that particular point.
Yeah, so getting into the book, just reading the title, I thought that it was going to give me a place to stand, because as I said, my dad was a classical Christian, and my brother is as well, and so they're very orthodox, and so I thought this was going to give me a leg up on them to, you know, at the Thanksgiving.
Oh, ammo against them kind
yeah.
of thing.
Yeah, and
got it.
I also tried that with your tactics book. I think I told you that as well.
Yeah.
So I
read... that's coming up. We'll talk about that.
Yeah, we can talk about that here in a little bit. So I ended up reading the book, and I had, as you well put the subtitle, I had nowhere to stand. I was just floating out in midair, and I couldn't link anything that I believed to a standard of truth. So it led to from a deconstruction to putting the house back together, so to speak, of my classical Christian roots. So,
mm-hmm. So this book then becomes a big challenge. I just think it's so incredible to think that you have a friend who's not a Christian, though thinks he's a Christian, and you're in a group that's not really Christian, though think they're Christian because they're on the progressive Christian side of the spectrum. And I know, by the way, that comment is going to offend a lot of people, but Christian means something in particular, and it's meant something in particular for 2,000 years, and I'm just using that as the standard to make this assessment. And so when he makes this statement offhandedly about feet firmly planted in midair, you are taken with the statement, you Google it up, and this is how you stumble upon the book that Frank Beckwith and I wrote in 1998, Relativism, Feet Firmly Planted in Midair. And you're not sure where I'm going, but you somewhat think, well, maybe this is going to be helpful to your cause against your conservative parents, conservative Christian parents. And so you're reading the book and suddenly you find you're the emperor without any clothes.
Yes. Yeah, precisely. And the funny part is after the first page, I quickly found where you stood and where I stood on the issues. But I was like, well, you know, progressive is all about enlightenment and learning everything that you can. And so I would have just said at that time that you just weren't as enlightened as I was. So I was gonna continue to read it so that I would still have this knowledge. And I could use the weak arguments that you made in the book and hash those out by myself. So when I went to Thanksgiving and my parents used those same kind of arguments, or my brother, I would...
Weak arguments, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And then I would use those against them. But like I said, as I continued to read the book, I found that I had the weak arguments and I found that I had to change those. And that went to my reconstruction, as I guess you could put it. So
this is kind of, you're getting pulled along, kicking and screaming in a direction you didn't intend to go, because God sovereignly used something that somebody else said to put you in touch with this book that you bought, you know, under other pretenses, and now you're caught, okay, based on what you're reading, okay? So God's hand is all over you, brother. I can see this right now. I'm kind of a, you know, passive player here. Frank and I wrote the book over 20 years ago, so my job's done. It's out there doing the work, and God's doing the work. And so somewhere along the line, though, did you either connect with the book on tactics right next, or did you connect with our podcast, or what was the sequence? How'd that work? I think tactics came next, didn't it?
Tactics came next.
Yeah, tell us about that.
Yeah, so I read Relativism, and I was dealing with some of those arguments. I was still very progressive. It wasn't a change overnight, but it was a slow change. Because
by the way, let me just underscore here, that is the point of gardening. These changes don't come fast. They take time for people to reassess, reevaluate, restructure their own belief system based on new information. That's gardening. And this is something I am emphasized at CIA and I do on the air here all the time, Josh. So I'm sorry for interrupting there. I just wanted to make the point. That's what was going on there with your life, wasn't it?
Yeah, and that's something that it's really important to remember, especially with progressive Christians, is it's going to take a while, because I think C.S. Lewis said it. Back in the day, it was easy to tell everyone thought they were sick. You just had to show them that Jesus was the cure. Today, you have to tell people they're sick and convince them they're sick and that you have the cure. So today you have to...
Interesting.
You have to tell us that we're sick, and you're going to have to convince us of that. And then you're going to have to show us that Jesus is the best cure for that answer and the true Jesus. Because a progressive will say, well, God is love. And I said that all the time. I said, God is love. But what I meant was, love is God. And so love was what I made it, and love was how I shaped love to be. So it was, I was my own sovereign. I was God, you know, and I was dictating what love looked like. And so it was a slow transformation over time. And so I picked up your tactics book and started reading that, because I still had...
Okay,
yes.
Go ahead. Yeah, tell me how that happened. How did you get a hold of the tactic? Why read the tactics book? What would what would possess you to do that, especially at the point that you're at, given the nature of the book itself?
Yes, well, it was a tactical game plan for having discussions. What caught my eye, mm-hmm. because I have me and my sister. Since my sister is in a lesbian relationship and still is and has been for about 8 mm-hmm. years, and so it was always me and my sister against my parents and my brother and my mom and all of them. So I read your book and I was like, well, this Greg is pretty smart from relativism, so I'm going to read his tactics book, but I'll use these questions in my view, in my presentation, which, by the way, if you've read the book, well, you wrote the book, but your listeners, if they've read the book, the first thing is, it's not a manipulation. You can't use it as a manipulation right. tactic. But that's what I was doing. I was going to manipulate it, and I was going to get my parents all into a corner, and then they would have to be okay and accept my sister and accept my beliefs and, you know, skip off into the relative dandelions. So
yeah, that's so interesting. Once again, you know, getting the book with a different goal in mind, and of course, God had His own goal in mind. So go ahead and tell the rest.
Yeah, so I ended up reading it and just saw that my logic and my reasoning were off, and that started to pull on my emotional side, because my relative side with the reading your books and all the logic and reasoning started to make sense to me, but I still had to deal with a lot of emotional and emotive thinking with my sister and my friends. It's like, well, if what Greg is saying is true in this book, that means that my friends are not going to be with Jesus, and my sister is not going to be with Jesus, and that was something that took me a long time of talking with my parents, reading your tactics book, and seeing that the logic is there, and so maybe I needed to fix some of my emotive thinking and not be. And I think A.W. Tozer said it well, is that the signs of maturity is when your emotions are tempered by your rationale. And so reading some of these classical authors, I after Tactics, I started picking up more classical authors again, because I went to a classical Christian Bible college. But I had a new lens, and I had a little better way of handling those, and so the relativism book and the tactics book really set my feet onto a good firm foundation, where when it came to dealing with my heart and my emotions, it was a lot easier for my Christian family and friends to speak into me, because I knew logically that it didn't make sense, that it did make sense, the arguments that you were putting out. But emotionally, I was having to change those emotions of, this is how it is. And then I read the story of reality quickly following that, and it answered a lot of questions. Huh. So especially...
That's the trifecta.
Yep.
That's my trifecta. I'm really flattered that you do that. But isn't it interesting, though, because the story of reality was in part written for non-Christians, in my mind, for Christians and non-Christians to understand the Christian worldview, and written in a way it was palatable no matter which side of the spectrum you were on. You know, there's not a lot of religious language in there. It's meant to explain. There's soft apologetics in there to show that it makes sense, and then I'm just letting the basic information do its work. But you ended up there. You didn't start there. You started with relativism, which is meant to critique a worldview. And then with the worldview of relativism critiqued and found faulty, then we see, well, what are the ramifications for our understanding of reality? Some form of moral objectivism is true, and this ends up pointing us to God. And that's kind of the way I end the book. At least my portion was the beginning and the end. Frank had the middle. And you went from there to tactics, which is not evangelistic at all. It's really meant to train Christians you know, a game plan for discussing your Christian convictions. And you figure I'll learn a couple of moves here and beat up my parents with them. And God got a hold of you through the details in that book. And when you were done with that, then you were, I don't know if you would consider yourself at that point enough turned around by the Holy Spirit to say that you were back in Christian camp, or you were still turning and then you got more substantive information by reading the story of reality. How would you characterize it, Josh?
Yeah, so I started reading Tactics, and then I found your podcast, this one, and then I listened to SDR Ask. And so those were working on me, and then a couple other people like the Elisa Childers podcast and her work has been very influential. And then so I picked up the story Reality because you had talked about it a couple times, and actually your last couple shows have been very interesting to me because those were topics that I was also questioning about the atonement and cosmic child abuse is what I would have
yeah,
as a progressive, I would have claimed that view as well. And so though,
sure.
And with that person that just stopped reading it that you were referencing last week, at that one point, it's like, no, please keep reading. Like, if you get past like the statement and you actually see your reasoning, you can see that it makes sense and that it completes the arc that the Bible is communicating. And so,
And by the way, that statement that Josh is referring to is when I talked about Jesus saved us. Save means to rescue from imminent danger. What was Jesus rescuing us from? And then I say in the book that Jesus came to rescue us from the Father. Now, this is a doctrine that is solid orthodoxy. There's nothing unusual about it, but there are a lot of people now that are deeply offended by that. I mentioned, I think last week, that someone got to that line and they closed the book and said, I'm not reading it anymore. They were so angry. And this is actually a feature of progressive Christianity and moving away from the substitutionary atonement. Jesus didn't die for our sins in that sense. Something else is going on their view. And this is offensive. This is cosmic child abuse. But the fact is, as you mentioned, Josh, when you keep reading, the justification biblically is given there. And this is what I felt scattered commentary last week tried to show what was going on biblically. And I thought of something since then, just to make this injection here. And that is, it says in Galatians that cursed is anyone who hangs on a tree. And it's referring there to an Old Testament verse and Jesus hanging on the tree of the cross, which means Jesus was cursed. Now, who cursed him? What was the nature of that curse? Well, that was he was cursed before the Father who punished him for being cursed on our behalf. So that's just another verse that reinforces this whole notion that Jesus died for us. But since Jesus was God, there was no suffering on the cross that didn't involve the members of the Trinity. Nobody outside of God, the Trinity, suffered as a result of taking the punishment for man's sin. Only God suffered. Anyway, I just thought I'd jump in with that because I was thinking about that during the week.
No, that's really good clarification. And so that I was questioning those same kind of questions of very, as the story Reality poses, kind of just the foundations of the Christian faith. And so at this point, I wasn't reading my Bible very much, which you'll find that most progressive Christians and people dealing with relativism, they don't read their Bibles very much. They have a few verses that they'll pick and pull here and there. And so I was just picking and choosing these verses that I liked when I was a progressive. But with that book, The Story of Reality, it pulls all of the Bible together and shows you the overarching storyline of the Christian faith and what it means to be a Christian. Mm-hmm. So as I read through that, I, kicking and screaming all the way, just came to that moment where I was at an end. I couldn't find any loopholes, and the Holy Spirit had worked on me all that time, and I decided to change my life and to start living for Christ. And I figured that if what all this says is true, then, you know, I need to know more and more about it so that I can tell my friends and my sister and my community group and all of them about these truths. And because I want them to experience that same freedom.
Sure. So. Sure, of course. Well, I'm curious, Josh, now that you find yourself through this process where there are different means, and I'm just going to use the language here, of gardening in your life, when the harvest came, well, like I said at CIA, the harvesting was easy because the fruit was ripe. It's almost like the fruit fell into the basket. I don't know if you were with anybody who was challenging you to receive Christ or you just turned to Christ in your heart and you've been following him ever since. But this is the kind of motif that I think is the sound biblical motif, the kind of journey that you just described. Even though I had been gardening in your life and maybe other people, others that you're reading, had been gardening, so to speak, once the fruit was ripe, I wasn't there to see this happen. I didn't even know it was happening. I was doing the radio show Gardening in Your Life and the other writings, whatever, and then here I meet you at CIA, a fully committed Christian, and working to learn how to be more effective as a communicator so that you can make a difference for the kingdom. It's just amazing to me, the trajectory that the Holy Spirit brought you on, and I'm thrilled that A Stand to Reason and some things I had written played a part in that. I mean, that's just thrilling to me. You know that. But I'm just marveling at what might appear to be the serendipity of it all. You know, it's just like, oh, these things are just happening, and it seems like accidental, coincidental, but they're not. Because we have a sovereign God that is using all of these things to accomplish his purposes. And it's just a great account. By the way, whatever happened with your folks? I mean, did you ever have a kind of a spiritual reunion with your folks? And how long ago did you come full circle? When did you kind of land with your feet firmly planted on solid ground? So give me a little time frame here.
Yeah, this is over about the course of a year ago. So it's pretty fresh. I would say last summer, I was really mending relationships with my parents, apologizing a lot for some of the things I've said, some of the arguments that we had, and, you know, it was just a very wonderful setting, and just the spiritual kind of reunion was, you could see that my parents were extremely just overwhelmed by the grace of God.
I'm sure. Yes, I'm sure.
That even though throughout life, I mean, when I was young, as I said before, I was a pretty nominal Christian, if that's even a thing. But I would go to church, I would do the motions, I would, you know, but I'd never really given my heart to God. And then I just knew that, you know, you did the church thing. And then once I got into this church that was doing really well, and really speaking to me, and got into this community group on the side, though, that wasn't doing what it was supposed to do, it captivated me, and it was very captivating, because I had weak biblical literacy, but it was just a testament to my parents of, like, and as you say on your show all the time, and even Stand to Reason being such gardeners in my heart, like, in my life, and that harvest finally came in. My parents were just overthrilled with joy.
I imagine. It's so interesting, too, that at CIA this last summer and the summer before, Alisa Childers was one of the presenters, and she's written this book called Another Gospel. It will be out in a couple of months. We'll have her here on the air. She's been on the show before, and she's been a sweet friend as we've watched her develop her own craft, her own capabilities, and her own significant voice in the progressive community, because she had an experience much like you did. said, being raised in a spiritual environment. I wouldn't think it's fair to call her a nominal Christian back then, because she wasn't. She was actually a musician, a well-known a Zoe girl. You know, that was her before she got married and started having kids and everything. She was a Zoe girl. So, and it comes from a very distinguished Christian background, music background. Her father, Chuck Gerard, you know, of Love Song, one of the first groups coming out of Calvary Chapel in the Jesus Movement. But then starting having to have questions about the legitimacy of the conviction she held because of a side group she's involved with that was progressive and challenging her really, really hard about the foundational elements of classical Christianity. And this forced her to go one of two ways, either to give in and follow the progressives or to fight back and say, I'm going to find answers to these questions. She took the second. Luckily, it saved her position in the church, her relationship with God, but also put her in a position to speak to others. And so it's very similar, it seems to me, what you just described and what Alisa describes in her own testimony and in her book.
Yeah, and that's the funny part of, well, it's not funny, it's probably not even a coincidence, but it seems that the progressive Christians try and get you in a small group where it's almost like an echo chamber of the same ideas and the same thoughts. And, you know, they very much loved if you were doubting. If you had answers, you were shamed. I remember saying one day to my friend, my gay friend that came out, I said, I don't know that you're right. And I said, because of this. And I was immediately like, well, we need to validate what he's saying. That's what I was told. And so it was a very...
You were told to validate what he was saying. They weren't saying he had to validate what you were saying. It's a one-way street.
Yep. Well, you can validate doubts. You can't validate truth, apparently. So
yeah.
So it is amazing and that those they do seem to try and... I don't know if it's intentional by the leaders or by people that are very captivated by progressive Christianity. I'm not really sure if it's intentional, but it's amazing how they try and get you in a small group of people that all believe the same, even if it's within an Orthodox classical church like the one that I was in, where the elders came out. And so it was very interesting talking to Alisa at CIA conference, because our stories are very similar.
Yeah. And it's interesting, you've got a stable church in general, but you got this outlier group that's allowed to pursue these things contrary to the goals of the church itself. That's a whole nother thing. But in a way, I don't fault them for having a smaller group. There's wisdom in that. You know, we do the same thing, smaller groups, discipleship groups or evangelism groups. You know, it's easier to talk with people and persuade them when they're in a smaller, sometimes in a more personal setting, than when they're just out in an audience. You know, it's just a different dynamic, at least for over time. You know, it's a different dynamic and it's more helpful in a smaller group. But that's an interesting observation, though. The other question I had, and then we'll kind of wind this up, is that I'm curious how your progressive Christian friends have taken the change in life and change in perspective. They can't be rejoicing now in where you're at. Have they stayed in touch with you, or what's the dynamic of that relationship now?
Yeah, so my sister has obviously kept in touch, just being family, and we call and talk a lot.
Sure.
So she's okay with my decisions, but it kind of feels now that it's just her at Christmas sometimes. But she is very loving, and so we're working through that. And the nice thing is I have a good relationship with her, so I think I have
That's
a
good.
Little more input into her life, but... the friends here that were in my community group, I got kind of left by them. And if I see them, I work at a coffee shop. And so I'm a roaster at a local coffee shop here in town. And I see them come in every once in a while. It's very short. And it's like I went against the tribe. And so they kind of put me on the outskirts, and so they'll be cordial, but other than that, there's not a lot going there.
Yeah, interesting. So now you're persona non grata in that group because you're not kind of walking in step with them. I guess it's understandable in a way, but it just so much for the love, love, love dominates everything, you know. And so anyway, look, I know you had more. We were going to talk a little bit about your working environment there, but we really got spent a lot of time just talking about this journey you've been on. I think that's been fabulous. And so Josh, I want to thank you so much for coming up to me at CIA. I mean, with all you've just said, and you've just kind of come full circle now, last year, last summer, and now this summer, you're at CIA, and you're fighting battles there with the crowd. I know because you told me details of it with the at the coffee shop, and the it's not a coffee shop, it's not a Denny's, it's probably more like a specialty coffee shop, more like a Starbucks. And you're standing in the gap there, and you're in the line of fire, and you're being gracious about it. It's just amazing what the Lord is doing in your life. So I just want to tip my hat to you for the progress you've made and coming to CIA and being willing to come on the show and talk a little bit about your very, very interesting story. And I just really, really appreciate the time you spent with us today, Josh.
Well, thanks for having me, Greg. And I don't know where I would be without SCR and all the Amy and Greg always talking. And so I'm sure that you guys will continue to pour in my life, and I hope to continue to pour in your life by being a strategic partner. So,
oh, that's great. Now, are you a strategic partner right now, or are you becoming one? Or I didn't know anything like this about.
Oh, I was, and then COVID hit, and then so I took a break. But we're picking back up, and so I'm going to pick back up with SDR because I obviously am a product of it. So,
well, this is a perfect ending for our conversation because I didn't set this up at all. I did tell Josh that after we're done talking, I'm going to move into talking about strategic partners. But there was a perfect segue that, and thank you for enlisting, you know, as a strategic partner. And it's Josh, it's kind of like what I've talked about before. And for the rest of you listening, it's a payback and a pay forward as well. It's a thank you for what you and Amy and the rest of the team has done in my life. And so I want to be part of that to pay back. But at the same time, I want to pay forward too. I want to make a difference. He's at CIA, for goodness sake. Now, that's not our enterprise, strictly speaking. That's Frank Turek's. But you get the point. We're all in this together. It's one giant big team. And so here's a guy that's going forward now to be trained more efficiently through another Christian organization that we partner with and stay on board with us so that he can then make a difference in the lives of the so many other people that he's encountering. And that's just there it is in a nutshell. And this is why I can be so comfortable in inviting you to enlist as a Stand to Reason strategic partner. Now, just so you know, a strategic partner is somebody who commits a certain amount of money every single month to support Stand to Reason. Usually you start at about $25 and you go from there, whatever you want. And strategic partners get special benefits. We just had a recent Facebook Live that only the strategic partners were privy to and could participate in. They get special discounts on product and books and stuff like that from our bookstore. But more importantly than anything else, friends, the strategic partners are our closest people. We appreciate everybody that is part of our community. And I say that absolutely genuinely. If we're just giving and you're receiving, thank God that we're able to do that in your life. That's our attitude. If you give back to us, wow, that's all the better. If you become a strategic partner, well, that's now you've signed up. Now you've enlisted. Now you're a soldier with us. You're part of our cadre. And this is what we've been doing this month, encouraging people to sign up during the month of August and be one of the 100. Okay. Now, I have mixed feelings about telling you what I'm going to say right now, but I'll just do it. I just learned this morning that 3 weeks into our program, we've got our 100. Okay. But our goal isn't just to get 100. That's a number to shoot for. Our goal is to get you on our team so we can do more effective work, the kind of work that Josh was just describing. Last year during this time, we got 133 strategic partners that were new to us. And I'd love to blow through 150 in the next week. And it's doable. It is absolutely doable. So I'm just putting it out there to you, even though I'm saying, yeah, we made our 100. Wow. Thank you, Lord. Hallelujah. Wait a minute. We still got a quarter of one quarter of the time left ahead of us. There's still track to cover before we hit the finish line. We can make this our best time ever. We can have a personal best here kind of thing. That's what I'm thinking. And so I would like you to seriously consider being part of our team as a strategic partner. If you want to do that, very simple. Go to str.org/partner. str.org/partner. And when you sign up in August to become a new strategic partner with a monthly automatic gift of $25 or more, we are going to send you a gift from us that will help you to pay it forward. We're going to send you a STR Tactics gift pack. And this is the same tactics that had such an impact on Josh. We're going to send it to the pastor or the leader that you designate, okay, so that they can then use it with your community to make a difference in the lives of others. This is going to be leveraged and paying it forward because of your partnership with us this month. By the end of the month, August 31st, that's the sign-up. If you just go to str.org, you'll probably see something right there, hit a button. But if you go to str.org/partner, that's the page for you to designate, indicate your gift, that you want to start as a strategic partner, and who you would like to designate the Tactics Gift Pack to, which, by the way, includes my original book, Tactics, A Game Plan for Discussing Your Christian Convictions. It includes a Tactics Video Study DVD with 6 in-depth sessions. That's for training groups. And it includes a quick reference card with an additional free video download titled Tactics in Engaging False Ideas. So there's lots there. We'd love to have you on board. Now's the time to do it. We got a few days left before we've run the course for the month of August. My encouragement, Josh's encouragement just a few moments ago, you heard him, become a strategic partner. str.org/partner. Let's take a break. We'll come back with not more of your calls, but I have more things to say, obviously, on Stand to Reason.
Have you seen our brand new website? Stop by str.org and enjoy a fresh, clean layout with all the same great content. The new Stand to Reason website was designed with you in mind. It has an easier-than-ever navigation and a crisp, simple layout so you can find all the sound analysis and careful commentary that you've come to expect from us. Browse new features that make finding your favorite resources easier than ever. As always, it's our goal to equip you, our fellow Christians, with the confidence, clear thinking, and courage you need for every encounter you have as a Christian ambassador. Our new website is just one way we're fulfilling that goal, allowing you to access the resources you need in a new and improved way. So visit str.org and keep coming back to discover new podcasts, articles, and videos each and every day.
Would you like a Stand to Reason speaker to speak at your church or event? Greg, Alan, Tim, and our newest apologist, John Noyes, are available, both in person and online. Just email booking@str.org to schedule them today. Our speakers can address a wide array of topics, from bioethics, gender issues, and science, to theology, philosophy, and how to respond to other worldviews, all from a biblical perspective. Whether it's a Sunday sermon, Zoom conference, or YouTube live event, our skilled and engaging speakers can be there, either physically or virtually, with the goal of equipping Christians to effectively influence the culture for Christ. To read their bios and learn more about the topics they cover, visit str.org. Then email booking@str.org to schedule Greg, Alan, Tim, or John today.
All right, friends, Greg Kokel back at you here. And just to let you know, we have because of the politics of COVID, we have lost a lot of events that we would normally be face-to-face with people. As Amy just mentioned in the spot, that we are available to do things online. We do that, and we still go face-to-face. And in fact, we're going to be doing that, thank God, in Washington, October 16th and 17th, and in Minnesota, November 13th and 14th. That's our reality conferences. There are already sign-ups for those two locations. Texas will be February 26th and 27th. That would be Dallas. And just in Dallas a few weeks ago, at the church where we're going to be holding reality, and that's where Frank Turek and the boys, including me, had, and the gals. When I say the boys, I mean like this is like a gender-neutral phrase, the way I use it, just so you know. So man up, ladies. That's the same church where we are going to be holding our reality in February there. So we're just thrilled about that coming up. And all of those are in play. We lost Orange County, unfortunately, this September. It was coming up the end of the September. That's been postponed till next year. We lost our event down in... where is that? Montgomery, not Montgomery, somewhere in Alabama, Birmingham. And incidentally, our event in the South is still in play. That is, we're not sure where our next event is going to be. We think we're going to be able to have it next year, but we need a church, just so you know. So if you have a church whose people believe in what we're doing with reality and passing the baton to the young people in your community, please contact us. And Danielle, D-A-W-N-I-E-L-L-E, Danielle@str.org is the contact. Keep in mind, if you haven't signed up for the Seattle, Washington event, it's actually Bellingham, but it's the greater Seattle area. There is limited seating here. We almost never have this concern because we have big venues that can take just about everybody. And it turns out that because of the circumstances, we can only take a limited number of people. I don't know what that number is for sure, but I think I just heard it's around 500, okay, which is a fraction of what we usually have in our big events like this. So if you are thinking about doing this, taking a group with you to either Washington, October 16 or 17, or Minnesota, November 13 or 14, you need to sign up post-haste, and you can sign up at realityapologetics.com. Got that? Realityapologetics.com. Okay? Let's see. What else do I have here that you need to know about? Red Pen Logic. If you have not signed up for Red Pen Logic, we've got... do we have 7,000 people that have signed up for that or subscribed? Yeah, it's unbelievable. We've only had 6 episodes, I think. I just saw the next episode to go out, and old rubber-faced Tim Barnett did a fabulous job. You are going to absolutely love this one because it's not just fun. We try to teach you how to think and resolve challenges in a fun way. That's where Tim comes in, so that it is effective and memorable. And and this next one coming out is responding to the atheist who says, well, you are an atheist about all the other gods, too. You're basically an atheist. The atheist is just an atheist about one more God than we are. Now, this challenge is daunting to a lot of Christians, and Tim Barnett answers it in the next Red Pen Logic, which will be, when is it, Amy? A couple days? I don't know. Today? It's coming out today or Wednesday? Okay, Wednesday it's coming out. So, and if you get there before it's posted, there's 6 or 7 others already there that you can enjoy. All right, so I encourage you, go to YouTube, Red Pen Logic, and sign up and subscribe. Every time a new one comes in, you'll be alerted, all right? I wanted to say something quickly here that is related in a way to a conversation that I had with a friend on the phone yesterday, and it's a conversation that relates to being a Christian in the midst of a culture that's going crazy, to put it simple. I honestly have never seen anything like this. I became a Christian in 1973. I lived through the counterculture of the 60s. I was born in 1950. That means when John Kennedy was assassinated, I was 12 years old. I was 13 years old. And when Martin Luther King was and Bobby Kennedy were assassinated, I was 17 years old. That was the year I graduated from high school. Okay, I remember the civil rights movement. I remember the Weathermen and the Students for a Democratic Society and the Black Panthers and all of these other radical groups of the 60s that were violent and destroying things. I was in many riots myself as a young man, including a massive one in the summer of 1970 in Chicago at Grant Park, where I pulled a young black man out of the bushes, 17 years old. He had a bullet hole in his chest. And with my military training, I was able to patch him up and get him off to a hospital. But I know about all of this stuff. And now we are facing something that reminds me so much of that time. Okay? So, wow. Now I'm a Christian, though. So I have a very different perspective on the realities I'm facing. You might say I have a different political perspective, but my politics are informed by my worldview. And I'm looking at the world in a very different way. And I'm looking at the nature of these conflicts in a very different way. And my assessments are very different. And I don't see something good. I see something terrible, bad, ugly happening. Even though many people who are involved in this are well-intentioned, even many Christians, I think many are being taken in by false ideas. And I think for many Christians, this could be disheartening. I'm going to be probably early next year, I'll be writing a mentoring letter regarding that. But I just want to, for the moment, I want to make an observation that I made to my friend. And the fact is, I was talking to her in the car on the way to my tax man to get my taxes done for last year. Glad that's out of the way. And while I was driving, I'm praying because I use my time to pray when I'm on the highway a lot of times. And singing. And what am I singing? This world's not my home. I'm just a passing through. If heaven's not my home, Lord, what would I do? Why am I singing that? Because I'm reminding myself that this life is just a very small slice of the rest of it. And the rest of it is eternity. Do you realize that as bad as it ever may get for you, on this planet, in this earthly life, in your 40 and 10, this is the worst it will ever be. Because after this, it's great and just gets better and better and better for so long that this 40 and 10 will drift back into the infinitely distant past until it disappears for all intents and purposes. But that present moment of fullness and richness and joy in the presence of God and doing the meaningful things that He has created us to do, that will endure day after day after day after day with no end. This is the worst it will ever get for us. And for those who are opposing us, this is the best it will ever get. It will never, ever get any better than this. Because the ride they think they're on that is so good, which actually isn't as good as they think it is, when it ends, it's over. And then they face God, and they face the punishment they deserve for their rebellion. Now, I take no joy in saying this. Please understand this, because I would not wish hell on my worst enemy. All you have to do is contemplate it for a millisecond and you realize how horrific such a thing is. But that is the end that God has appointed for them. And for them, this is the best it will ever be. And this goodness they experience by the grace of God in this life, whatever goodness they experience is the grace of God. Every good gift comes down from heaven, James says in chapter 1. And even non-believers experience the good. But that's the end of it. And this goodness and this 40 and 10 for them will disappear into an infinitesimally small moment as eternity moves forward in the midst of their punishment and their isolation from God. Not a pleasant thought, but it puts things into perspective. This is why Paul can say in 1 Corinthians, make that 2 Corinthians chapter 4, for momentary light affliction is producing for us an eternal weight of glory. And the other thing I mentioned to my friend is that as bad as it may get here, it's better than it. Well, as bad as it may get here, it still would be better than the way Christians have had it for 2,000 years. And most Christians right now in our lifetimes are having it. We just received a letter from somebody from India. And he says here, this is on our web, I am an Indian Christian. Since the past few years, there have been a massive malicious campaign being carried out against Christians and missionaries in India. Christians are portrayed as manipulative, anti-nationals, traitors, etc. Most of the propaganda is spread through websites. And then he gives an example of a YouTube channel run by an Indian American named, and he gives the name, his, I can't pronounce it, so I'll keep going. His videos are filled with hate and unsubstantiated claims against Christianity and missionaries, and some of his speeches can easily classify as hate speeches. In one such video, he claims that Christians and missionaries are planning to break India. Most of his videos get thousands of views. He has 2,800,000 subscribers and 1,000 videos. It's dangerous. It's malicious. So many non-believers get influenced by such videos. How should we Indian Christians deal with such hate campaigns? Is what he asks here in his letter. Now, this is just meant to give you a cameo, a picture of what it's like in other countries for Christians. We don't face anything like this. What we face is not good. It shouldn't be happening. It's a violation of our civil liberties and just civility, just basic good manners in many cases. But, you know, we haven't shed blood like many in India have. I'm involved with a mission organization called MPART there, and the magnificent EMPART, magnificent things that they're doing. Tens of thousands of churches that they've planted. Yet their Christians are suffering miserably because of their faith, because of their convictions, and they keep pressing on. We have got it easy. So I just pass these things on at the end of this hour to get you thinking. If you're feeling a bit down, and I understand it completely if you are, I have to fight back on that too. When you see what's going on, keep in mind that we've got it better than everybody in the history of Christianity and almost everybody that's living as a Christian even today in other countries. And this is the worst it will ever get, friends. For momentary light affliction is producing for us an eternal weight of glory far beyond all comparison. As we look not at the things which are visible, because that's perishing, but rather the things that are invisible, which are eternal. 2 Corinthians 4:16-18. Mark it, read it, make it your own. Greg Kokel here in Stand to Reason. Give them heaven, friends. Bye-bye now.